The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 U.S.-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out Pear.com today to learn more. That's Pear.com.
Be advised that this show is not for children, the faint of heart, or the easily offended. The explicit tag is there for a reason.
Recording live-ish, half of us, from Glory Hole Studios in Chicago, this is Cognitive Dissonance. Every episode we blast anyone who gets in our way. We bring critical thinking, skepticism, and irreverence to any topic that makes the news, makes it big, or makes us mad. It's skeptical, it's other stuff. We've got Dan and Frank. But thank God I'm an atheist.
Did you just fuck up your own intro?
That was deviation. Oh. That's the kind of ad lib.
Wow.
And,
amazing.
Frank, write that down. We need to remember that for our show.
Lib. Two words, motherfuckers. Consummate and professional.
It's a good idea.
So Dan and Frank from Thank God I'm an Atheist, thank you for being on our program.
Well, thank you for having us, and
guys.
Almost getting the title right. That's awesome. Just thank God I'm atheist. We don't have the "an" in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you should. I'm just saying.
Okay. I only bring it up because otherwise people will try to go to the website and they'll type in the wrong URL, and then we'll... You're right. There is some question as to whether or not we're an atheist or just atheist.
Yeah.
But I figure if they call themselves Christian or a Christian... we can call ourselves atheist or an atheist.
Dan, that was good.
Wow.
You see?
Wow.
I mean, good save, Dan.
That's honestly more thought that you put into the title of your show than I have put 249 episodes of this program, but I've not given that amount of consideration to any decision we've made. So we wanted to talk to you about this tremendous article from the Herald Sun. You probably read it, because who doesn't read the Herald Sun?
Oh, I'm all about the Herald Sun. I've got my subscription coming daily.
If we are recording and the doorbell rings, you got to pay the paper.
Exactly.
So this is from the Sun. NASA refutes Christian claims, and it kind of could have stopped there, actually. Like, it doesn't need to go beyond that, because NASA typically refutes Christian claims.
Right.
But it does, anyway. NASA refutes Christian claims that the blood moon on September 28th will cause the end of the world.
Right. Right. Well, I mean, it's kind of obvious when you think about it that that all of the portents from the skies are controlling, because that's how that works, right?
Yeah, I think thousands of years of trial and error have shown us that the end of the world is nigh.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. It's
absolutely.
Just not this nigh.
It's always nigh.
It's sort of continually nigh. It's the nighest thing that you can possibly imagine.
It's always kind of just sort of fuzzy in the corner of your eye.
It's somewhere.
It's never fully in view.
It's coming. Right. I mean, Jesus said he would be back within that generation.
Mm.
And that's kind of been, it's been nigh ever since that moment.
Yeah, but what's a generation to Jesus?
Right.
that's the question.
That's the question.
Yeah.
Dude. Yeah, maybe he meant the Pepsi generation.
Yeah, no, that's true.
You don't know.
Yeah.
I do want to read a little piece from the article just so that we're really clear on what we're mocking mercilessly. The blood moon This is a fucking moon. Direct quote. I can't even read Blood Moon and not
I
laugh.
Always wonder, too, like, with the Blood Moon, I wonder if there's other, like, humors that have a moon. Like, is there a phlegm moon as well?
Oh, wow. A yellow bile moon?
A yellow, a bile maybe moon? A black bile moon?
Sure,
I don't
not?
Know. Yeah.
Since we're going to humors.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going back to, like, fucking the Stone Age,
right.
Might as well just reel it all back.
Why
you know?
Not?
The best part is that, like, by comparison with this, the fucking humors are high technology, right? Like,
yeah, the humors are like a zipper to the Amish, you know?
So this is, the Blood Moon is the fourth and final eclipse in a tetrad.
Oh.
Four consecutive total lunar eclipses. I think that should be eclipse-eye.
Eclipse-eye, yeah. You're right.
Each separated by six lunar months, which fulfills biblical prophecy of the apocalypse.
Wow.
It's so metal. That shit, I just gotta say, that shit is so fucking metal.
So wait, there's nothing about this where the moon's not gonna be red. I mean, let's get this.
Well, it's kind of red.
It's red?
When you have a full eclipse of a full moon, then it kind of turns red, which
but,
is why they call
not,
it the
but
blood
moon,
no right? But
it's no different from any of the other eclipses.
I actually have a question about that. If it's fully eclipsed, how would I know it turned red? It's eclipsed. I can't see it. It could turn anything it fucking
well, no.
wants.
When it gets, I when it gets fully eclipsed, it goes full rainbow. but when you start to be able to see it again, then it's just the red. That's all
oh,
you got.
Okay, mm-hmm. Yeah. So Oiji Biv have left.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Could you imagine if the fucking moon went full rainbow? They would flip their shit. They would flip, because they fucking flipped out when we fucking projected a rainbow on the White House.
Yeah, right.
Could you imagine if the fucking moon went rainbow?
You know
rainbow?
What, though? It is a known fact, and Frank, you can back me up on this.
Yeah.
The moon is the gayest of all of the celestial bodies.
Well, I was unaware of its
oh,
proclivities.
No. That thing, it is totally queer.
I kind of want to hear the reason why, I kind of don't. Well,
you know the whole man in the moon thing.
Oh,
yeah. That guy.
I understand now.
What we don't see is that on the dark side of the moon is another man.
Did you watch the trailer for this? There's a trailer that autoplays on this, and it's
oh,
a trailer
I just shut
for
off anything that autoplays.
It's a trailer for a movie called Four Blood Moons.
Yeah, I saw that.
Fuck you.
And it looks ridiculous. I guess it's already out. I haven't watched it yet, but it looks terrible.
But it says it's based on a New York Times bestseller,
it also
so it must be good.
It also says it's like a documentary.
Right.
And I'm like, what the fuck are you documenting?
But it's a documentary with like the shittiest recreations of like Columbus and stuff that you've that you can imagine. Like somebody like used their mother's curtains to make costumes for ancient, or old. I'm trying to say ancient, but ancient isn't right. Whatever the fuck Columbus was. How old was he? How far? 1400s. 1400s.
He was a fucking monster.
Well, there is that. Yeah. There is
as
that. Anyway.
Yeah. So what do you guys, are you guys nervous? Have you invested entirely in gold commodities for the upcoming apocalypse per?
You know what? We've been burned by this before. You guys, I got to be honest with you. It's a little known fact. This is true, actually. Our show started when Frank and I went on a local radio show. You remember those many years ago, about 4 or 5 years ago, when Harold Camping had his big prediction, and he was.
We love Harold Camping.
Yeah, we were all gonna die.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Frank and I did.
I still feel I'm going to die, though. Like I think that's still accurate.
Well, technically. Yeah, you are going to die. Like, I mean, good. You have that figured out right. That's true. But we went on this local radio show and we did Rapture Watch. And we basically were just sort of waiting for all of us to get raptured.
That sounds amazing.
That sounds super great.
It didn't work, though. There was no rapture.
Oh, you didn't get raptured?
It turns out that nobody got raptured and it was a big disappointment. But that's when we decided that it would be fun to do a podcast.
Is it not possible that, like, just one guy was raptured and nobody knows.
Right.
If it's a small enough number of people, God just like...
Steve in Indianapolis was the only guy that was raptured.
Well, we staged a rapture.
Has anybody seen Steve? No. Where was Steve?
It's just a low-level rapture.
I got to admit, though, I absolutely love when they start putting dates on these things.
Oh, yeah,
because
it's the best.
Then you get a chance to... Because we listen to clips every week, and almost inevitably, someone will say something like... it's just around the corner or something bad is going to happen. And they never give a definitive timeline. This is an absolute definitive timeline that Hagee gave.
He said, I love it.
Hagee said that it's going to happen before October of 2015.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's great because I got a big project that's due October 3rd, and I haven't done any of it because asteroids.
Perfect.
So,
go out and buy something on spec or buy something with credit. You'll be fine.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
It's time to buy that Ferrari you've always wanted because don't worry. It won't come due.
So there's a little bit of a Mormon angle to this.
There is a weird
prediction.
Mormon angle. And so Frank and I are both ex-Mormon. So I thought what I need to explain to you, because I know that everybody thinks Mormons are the goofiest shit out there. And believe me, they are.
They got
some goofy going on.
But I do think that Jehovah's Witnesses give you guys, I shouldn't say you guys, but give them a run for their money in some respect.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
But they have some pretty wacky beliefs. But in the end, Mormons in general are the most pragmatic people on the earth.
Yeah, absolutely.
They have boring meeting rooms and they have everybody's just a buttoned up business person in Mormonism. They're all Mitt Romney. Every last one. So
just joyless robots?
Yes.
Basically. Yeah.
That is exactly it. They are joyless robots. That's perfect. So imagine all of these joyless robot people. And then somebody starts claiming that there's going to be, that the end of days is happening with this blood moon.
Yeah.
It never happens. They don't go for this shit.
No.
So there's a fringe element of Mormons that are buying into this.
Let's be clear about that.
And it is fringe. It's not mainstream at all. But there's this.
Are these the ones who marry a bunch of people?
No. They're still in the mainstream Mormon church.
Okay.
But they're just like this weird fringe element of them.
Okay.
But there's this lady named Julie Rowe who wrote a book. She's a Mormon. She's a mother, of three or whatever, which every Mormon woman that's ever described, you'll see the word mother of blank after her name because that's all they care about.
Shit.
I mean, a mother of three is like, she's like barely even... She's barely even fold at that point.
You're thinking about quiverful people.
Yeah, exactly.
No, dude, the Mormons pump them out.
The Mormons
do like to have a lot of
babies. It's because, in part
they're
because...
They're like Irish Catholics, dude.
They really are. And in part, that's because the only thing that women are worth in the world is baby machines. That's the only thing that gives them any value in the Mormon church. So they kind
of
have to keep doing it.
Part of that because you have to live on a planet with your family, and it'd be super boring if there's only two of you.
The problem with that, Mormon afterlife is very confusing because the problem with the planet that you're going to go live on with your family, and that you're told that your family's going to be together forever, but your kids get their own planet too.
Yeah.
No, that's the best part.
Where the fuck are you?
It doesn't make any sense.
No,
maybe they clone them all. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. So this lady, this mother of three, apparently had a near-death experience and went beyond the veil.
Mm.
And when she went beyond the veil, she discovered that, these blood moons are indeed going to trigger the second coming of the Lord and all of those sorts of things.
Right.
But she brings in a whole bunch of, Mormon shit.
Yeah.
As long as she had this realization while she was oxygen deprived and dying.
Yeah, exactly.
That's when your brain is really hammering on all cylinders.
That's the good stuff.
That's right. Yeah. Well, they say that the last thing that happens when you have a near-death experience is that you get that influx of DMT, the same drug that's in ayahuasca, the big hallucinogen. So
Yeah.
It doesn't surprise me that she got a really interesting, happy story told to her.
Well, then she wrote a book, right?
But she wrote a couple books, and they've sold 20,000 copies or whatever. And now there's this group of people, and the Mormon Church is denying it. The Mormon Church keeps saying things like, "No, this is not real. Don't worry about it." But there's this group of people, man. Mormons are really into. And here's how Mormons deal with the apocalypse coming. They don't pray and get all kooky. They go and buy prepper stuff. They go and buy 4 years worth of food and guns.
I've never understood maybe I just don't understand the word apocalypse, but to me an apocalypse means nobody lives. So what do I need the food for? It still seems like a waste, right? Like, Oh, it's going to be an apocalypse. Everybody's going to die. Oh, I better stock up on jelly. Like, why? I'm going to need ammunition. There's nobody to shoot.
Right.
You're dead. They're dead. If you're not and they're not, it's not an apocalypse.
Yeah.
Well, just like with everything, Mormons do it wrong. They do apocalypse wrong. Their apocalypse is like, yeah, a bunch of there's some, maybe some earthquakes and some stuff, but most people live.
Yeah.
And then the worst part is, here's the worst part about Mormon apocalypse, is that after, you know, all of the earthquakes happen and then Jesus comes back, and then those who are still alive have to stay alive for 1,000 years and do work.
That genealogy sucks. Work.
They're already doing that.
They're just doing. God. They're doing genealogy work, and they're baptizing people for the dead for 1,000 fucking years.
Wait a minute. You got to stay alive for 1,000 years doing paperwork.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like you're just like the religion, filing folks. Things.
You're like congratulations, you're like Kim Davis for God. You're like a clerk.
Yeah. Congratulations. You're now perma clerk. Enjoy that.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a privilege that I dream not of.
Mm. Oh, man. Yeah, that's not an apocalypse though. That's a fucking global inconvenience.
Yeah.
That's all that is.
Yeah, that's probably how the church should describe it. The LDS Church, global inconvenience. Maybe that's the name of them too.
One thing I don't see, you mentioned Harold Camping earlier. One thing that happened with that is that people really did go out and spend all their life savings, sever ties with people they thought that they'd never see after, you know, May 22nd or whatever it was.
Right.
And basically just really treat this as if it were the end of the world. I don't see that as like a mass like this is the only article I've seen
right,
on this.
Right.
It's not like it's plastered all over the television. I don't see a bus that rides by that says beware the tetrad of blood moons.
It does is kind it of speak big? To Hagee's popularity versus Camping's, right? Like,
yeah,
his followers are cool right up until he says, hey, there's a real thing, and then they're all like, nah.
Yeah. I'll buy your book.
Yeah, exactly.
And just so when God calls us all, I'll be like, I did buy the book. I just didn't plan.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
My favorite thing that happened with Camping was that some brilliant person came up with an idea where, like, pay me right now in advance, and then when you're raptured, I'll take care of your pets.
Oh, yeah.
That was great.
So smart.
That was great. We saw that. I actually think that maybe Hagee's followers have just gotten it right. Like, they're just like, oh, it's going to be the apocalypse September 28th. What are you doing? That's like, it's going to be the apocalypse Wednesday. What are you doing Tuesday? I don't know. Fucking going to work. I don't have anything else to do.
Right.
Like, what do you want? I'm fucking going to die Wednesday. What do you want from me?
Yeah.
Like, I have no hopes and dreams. I'm an Hagee follower.
Yeah.
You know?
That's a good point. It's not
clearly
like.
Clearly, I've given up on life.
It does make one wonder if, like, life experiences, like, you know, skydiving suddenly gets a little bit of a bump. Yeah. Suddenly, like, all of these scuba people are seeing a small uptick in their participation.
But I would think too, like, scuba diving, we'd be like, ah, fucking yawn, you know, like you've fallen out of the plane, like, well, all the fucking fear is gone. Tomorrow I'm checking out anyway.
Right.
If this doesn't work out, all I did was just move my timeline up a day.
Yeah.
Fucking less snooze.
Maybe it's like an increase in, like, strap-ons.
Right.
Or so, you know what I mean? Like, you know, more anal lube,
right.
Things like that, you know?
Because if I find out the apocalypse is coming, I'd just be fucking until it happens.
Yeah, exactly.
I would fuck my way to the apocalypse.
Absolutely. But that's
fuck every minute of the day. I'd fucking borrow someone else's dick when mine got tired to fuck with it. I don't care.
But the sad part about it is that that's like the non-believer's way of doing it. If you're a believer, you're not allowed to sin. Like, the last thing you want
right.
to do is actually do something that's going to fuck it up for you the day before you meet Jesus.
Yeah. You go up to see Jesus. He's like, did you get pegged by your wife last night? The fuck, Carl? What's going on?
You were doing fine.
You were like a holy person, Carl, until you got fucked in the ass with a 20-inch dildo.
I got confused. I'm sorry. It was the end of the world. I didn't know what to do. I was thinking about scuba, but then I just decided.
I get excited by the snorkels. I don't know. It just
more
tubes everywhere.
My wife stuck the snorkel inside of her and everything got weird.
Oh, no. I never have to come up for air. This is great.
So So we'll be back in a very short while with Dan and Frank from Thank God I'm Atheist.
I think it's Thank God I'm an Atheist.
I think you're wrong.
I think it's Thank God I am an Atheist.
Thank God y'all are atheists. That's a different show.
That's Bobby C.
And Miss Ashley. But we'll be back with Dan and Frank at the end of the show. But we're going to do a couple of news stories in between for you to suffer through.
Alabama town to ban saggy pants and too short shorts after councilman prayed about it. So, Alabama's evidently solved all of its other problems.
Right, yeah.
Right?
Sure.
This is like, and now they're going after the short shorts. And there is some Shutterstock.
The Shutterstock, my favorite, is my new favorite search term, teens in shorts.
And like, I read that and I thought, you didn't have to tell me they were teens.
Yeah, I don't see any cesarean scars. So...
I'm just saying if legs could look happy.
Oh, they would, yeah. Gosh, booty shorts. They're trying to get rid of booty shorts, and there's a great picture of booty shorts on this article. And you're like, who other than some asshole would go to get rid of those?
A joyless Mormon robot.
How dare you? Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it.
Yeah. I cannot... So this is obviously... what they really want to do is they want to get rid of the baggy pants, because... And then they decided that was kind of sexist, so they had to do something mean to women, too. It really says that. Like, that's the rationale.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
They're like saying, well, wait a minute. We're being mean to men, so let's be assholes to women, too. So they've decided that the functional equivalent of saggy shorts is short shorts. And that could not be further from the truth.
I wouldn't mind if they got rid of saggy shorts for women. And they all had to wear like yoga pants and short shorts.
Right.
Tights. Sure.
Just no saggy drawers. Yeah. Like, all right. Well, I mean, that's a win-lose. Yeah. So, all right.
All these guys walking around in tight pants.
I know. You're just like, yes. Whoa. No. I don't know what to think. Alabama's so confusing.
Like, that one's got long hair. Not sure.
Not sure.
Oh, it's got a rat tail. It's a dude. In Alabama, that's a dude.
Yeah, right? You're just like, not sure.
Yeah.
In Alabama, wow. Would not fuck.
You know, this is so similar to, you know, basically putting your females in a bag.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It's very similar to that. It's that... I understand the saggy pants thing. I don't get.
I think it's racist.
I think it's racist.
I think they're basically saying don't dress in a style approximating black urban youth.
Yeah,
right. That's what they're saying because they think black people are scary.
Yeah,
and black people clothes are scary, and black people culture is scary, and so they want to avoid anything remotely black urban.
Yeah,
right.
And then the other side of that is. Anti-sex, right?
Sure,
so the other side of that is, well, we don't want to teach the kids about sex, but we don't want them touching either, and the booty shorts facilitate the touching.
Sure.
Well, shouldn't our religious ideas stand up even under a scientific approach? I mean, either a thing is true or it isn't.
Well, certainly, but listen, Joe, there are some things we just have to accept on faith.
So I almost never cover the, like, the one-off churches, like, you know, hey, flying spaghetti monster guy gets to wear a colander in his driver's license picture. It's never going to be on the show. Like, it's never, ever going to be on the show. But this one did make me laugh because they have a billboard. The only reason we're talking about this is because of the billboard. This story comes from metro.co.uk. Church of Bacon sees rush of new members after free wedding offer. And they've got a billboard that I think is actually really awesome. It's a set of hands in the prayer thing with a strip of bacon between them.
Yeah, like right on the thumbs. Yeah. It's like, here's the steeple, here's the bacon.
And it's like, when I look at that, I think, like, that's the most awkward way to eat your bacon. Like,
oh, yeah.
It's a really weird...
But you got to open the church doors first, Tom. Right? That's how it works.
It stretches the bacon.
Yeah.
That's what... And then it says, bacon is our God. Because bacon is real.
And then it's praisebacon.com. Yeah, I love this. I think it's
very funny.
The thing is, though, I'd join the church of short ribs. You know? I would join the Church of Roast Turkey with dressing and cranberries.
Yeah, I'm on that. Yeah, yeah.
I would join the Soccer Tort Church.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
The Cuban Sandwich
the
Church.
Cuban, yeah, I would Cuban do that. Sandwich.
Yeah, I would.
The Gyros Church.
That's
a church, though, that you don't want to go and sing the hymn.
No.
Because everybody in there is just
stinky.
Oh, God.
That's an outdoor service.
It is, yeah.
A lot of these are, admittedly, a lot of these require an outdoor
service. Very true. Very
true. The Hibarito Church, I know you're not a fan, but I would attend.
I would stay away from the Tofu Church.
Like, no. The Tofu Church would just be full of fucking annoying people. Like, the congregation for the Tofu Church, the whole time they would just tell you about how great the Tofu Church is. Ugh. It would be exhausting.
Look, this tofu's shaped like bacon.
They would try to convince you that it tasted like actual meat.
Yeah.
That's what they would be like. Oh, no, this is a tofu burger. Fucking bite your tongue. You can make it a circle, but that's not a fucking burger. You know, you can shape a fucking poo into a circle, but that is not a burger.
I watched a video today. It was on Reddit, so it was like the top video on Reddit for a while, so probably a bunch of people have seen it. But the title was I made a $1,500 sandwich, and I was like, and so when I first saw it, I thought, well, how did you make a $1,500 sandwich? He did everything for it. So he tilled the land and planted the vegetables. Then he went and, you know, had wheat, and he crushed up the wheat and did all that. He went to a place to kill a chicken and killed his own chicken. And how they killed the chicken was crazy. They had like this little board on the ground. You put the chicken's head under the board. You step on both ends of the board and you just pull its head right off.
What?
Yes, its head just pops directly off.
That's not.
It's crazy. It's crazy. Chicken, chicken on there.
That's like one of those things. Like, there's got to be a better way.
He made his own butter and his own cheese. And he basically did all this extra work. You know, he went out to the ocean and got sea salt for the salt. And, like, you know what I mean?
What?
Like, yeah, so he did all this extra work. And he takes a bite of this chicken because he cooks the, you know, the chicken up, and he makes it. And he takes a bite of this chicken. And they said, so how was it? He says, it's not bad. And then he looks like he's going to cry because he spent 6 months of his life for a sandwich that's not bad. It's so awesome.
There are a few foods that when you make them from scratch, they are nothing but work. And then they yield a product that's identical to what you could have done short.
I find puff pastries like that.
Pumpkin pie is the same thing. Roast a pumpkin. Fucking get all the flesh out. Get all the seeds and shit. Make a pumpkin pie. It tastes just like you used the can.
Yeah.
It tastes just like you used.
Yeah.
All you did was add time and work to it. That's all you did. You didn't get anything better out of that equation.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there are some foods that are like that.
Yeah.
There's a few foods, though, that you make on your own and you're just like, oh, my God, this is the greatest thing.
Yeah, you'll never go back.
Yeah.
Mayonnaise.
Mayonnaise is a perfect example. Yeah,
mayonnaise all day. Absolutely. You eat a food with your own mayonnaise, you're like,
That's a good.
Turned out a thousand times better.
Yeah. Way better.
Yeah. But the Church of Bacon has you covered, so I have nothing else to say about it.
I'd join the Church of Mayonnaise,
I would join
too.
The Church of Mayonnaise. Some would argue I have joined the Church of Mayonnaise, or at least I sing in its choir on the regular.
Want to contact the guys? Go to DissonancePod.com to get links to their Google+, Facebook, and Twitter accounts. If you want to contact them directly, send an email to dissonance.podcast@gmail.com. Or you can call and leave a message at 740-74-DOUBT. That's 740-743-6828. Do you want to support the show? Go to patreon.com. That's patreon.com/dissonancepod. Or click the link on the podcast homepage, and you can donate to the production of Cognitive Dissonance on a per-episode basis. If you can't spare any money, take a second to give us a 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher, or spread the word about the show. We want to send a big, heartfelt glory hole to all the patrons and people who rate us. You fucking rock.
So this story comes from Telegraph. Topless protesters disrupt Muslim conference on women. So I saw this a handful of times, and I clicked on a couple of the articles, and I wasn't real impressed by a few of the some of the reporting on it. But I grabbed this one in particular, this article in particular, because when they showed up, when the protesters jumped out, the conversation that the fundamentalist preachers were discussing was the question of whether or not wives should be beaten. And I thought, like, how is it 2015?
Yeah.
And supposedly learned people are standing on a stage in front of a fucking crowd of people in a country like France.
Yeah.
Having a conversation as if they were civilized people.
Yeah.
In a civilized country.
And you can't even ask that question, even if your answer is no, because your brain should immediately reject the question.
Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly. The question itself
is absurd. You should never even bring the question up.
To engage the counterargument is to presume that the argument itself has any merit whatsoever.
In some way.
Right. Yeah. I'm fucking flabbergasted.
Yeah. And it said that the protesters, aged 25 and 31, grabbed microphones and shouted feminist slogans in French and Arabic before being roughly bundled off the stage by about 15 men and handed over to police. Video footage of the incident shows a man apparently kicking one of the women. And I guess that answers your question on whether or not women should be beaten.
Right. Well, I think he was on the pro side in that argument. It's like, I would like to argue for the motion. And the con side's like, well, I guess weather is still a conversation, but we're definitely doing it.
Yeah.
Like, whether we should is still part of the conversation. Some of the men in the audience shouted dirty whores and then kill them. These are people expressing a contrary view.
Yeah, with their shirts off, though, Tom.
Right.
You're neglecting that they had their shirts off, and that should allow you to kill them.
That shit is in France, man.
Yeah.
That's fucking unbelievable.
Yeah, the part that is the part of the nipples that isn't blocked out, I can see Je suis at the top.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can tell, like, it's not like they're communicating with these people that are in the audience, even in Arabic, if they're writing them on themselves in French.
In French, yeah.
Although maybe it would be harder to write in Arabic on yourself, the little words. And you wind up looking like the Lord of the Rings ring.
You
know, just like,
you got to put her in a fire in order to read her.
Oh, they totally do that. They would have done that.
They would dump these women in a mortar without a second thought.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. And the thing is from the inside, there's a group of people saying, this is horribly sexist. This is awful. You shouldn't be doing this.
Sure.
You shouldn't be talking about this. So this is from the inside they're doing this. Which is heartening because you need people on the inside of that religion
to agitate for change,
to say no more. This is stupid. We shouldn't be going through all these backwards policies. And they're pushing the envelope, not just by taking the stage, but by taking the stage shirtless.
Right.
You know, pushing the envelope, pushing it as far as they can. And they were, you know, they got a beating for it, but, you know, hats off to these women.
Oh, brave as fuck,
brave
right?
as hell.
Because you know that they knew going in that the stakes were high. They knew going in that, you know, by doing this, if they're part of this community, they're now ostracized from this community, you know, by and large.
Yeah.
That they stand the risk of being, you know, beaten, whatever. I mean, vilified in every way. And they still did it. It's brave as hell. I just, like, the part of me that galls the shit out of me, man, the part of this that galls me so much is that we would even have a venue that would allow a conversation like this to occur as if it were legitimate.
Yeah.
There are some questions which are so ridiculously backward, so outlandishly barbaric, that to lend them credence by putting them on a stage and setting up a microphone and pretending that you have esteemed colleagues.
Yeah, right.
You know, on this thing, this is not like the debate, you know, between even like Bill Nye and Ken Ham, right? Like, that's two sides of an absurd argument, you know? The question is absurd, but it's not violent.
Yeah.
The question is absurd, but it's not damaging to 50% of the fucking world population.
Sure.
This is not a conversation that we should even allow people to have and still pretend that we're having it in a civilized fashion, because there's nothing civilized about the conversation.
You're right. You're right. It's basically hate speech.
Yes,
it's hate speech. Now, should they? You know, we should. You know, definitely they have every right to have this conversation. You know, every right to have this conversation. Yes. But just because you have the right to have this conversation doesn't mean you're free from
consequences,
which is, you know, somebody jumping on stage or you being called an idiot, somebody who's an awful person for even entertaining this idea.
Yeah.
And this is a good thing that it's coming from the inside, though. At least it feels like it's coming from the inside, right?
Right.
It's a good thing that that's happening because, you know, the fundamentalist Islam is a bad idea. It's a lot of bad ideas, all sort of mixed up into one. And if there can be a breaking out of that and a removal of some of those really horrible ideas, you know, that women aren't equal, that women should be injured, you know, that gays should be killed, that people should have to put their hands in a hand chopper off a machine. If all those ideas go away, you have a much more civilized religion, something that can actually be reasoned with.
Do you think, honestly, that's even possible? Because, you know,
they were burning witches in the United States fucking 200 years ago. Maybe longer. I don't know how long ago that was. 1600s, was it? Maybe 400 years ago? 400 years ago, something like that? They were burning witches.
I guess that's true.
There's still horrible shit that Catholics do. You know, there's still horrible
shit.
How
many generations? You know, like because I've heard a similar argument, you know, that I think that you're making is that Islam is still a young religion and that Christianity went through these growing pains and it came out the other side imperfect, deeply imperfect, you know, but much less violent.
Yeah. Well, I think, and this is just, I mean, fucking, I don't know the real reasons here. This is just speculation, but I also think that Islam sort of had its own idiot circle that sort of perpetuated all the same ideas for way too long without outside influence. So it never really had the sort of any kind of progression. Look it in its face and say, hey, let's fucking change this. You know what I mean? Like, let's fix this. And now there's social media and TV and, you know, ways in which you can find things electronically, et cetera, that there's no way to keep out those ideas. You can't isolate yourself anymore.
Sure.
And so I think that it's just a matter of time before Islam starts shedding these.
So you think that will have a moderating effect on Islam?
I think so, eventually.
Yeah, because it seems to be having a polarizing effect right now.
Yeah. The thing is, of course, we're only finding out about ISIS. We're only seeing, you know, these assholes that say awful shit, the people who chop other people's hands off. There's plenty of moderate Muslims. They happen to be leaving Syria right now.
Yeah. I'm not pretending that all of Islam is represented.
No, I know. But I'm saying, like, all the moderate Muslims, they're on a boat.
Right.
They're heading
like,
over
fuck
the
this.
Fucking water.
Right.
Trying to get to a place that isn't going to fucking have them die.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And I know that's a blanket statement. Clearly, I'm sure there's fundamentalists and whatever. But you understand what I mean.
But if you send Cecil an email about
it. No, please tell me the exact number of people, fucking Syrian refugees that are fundamentalists, because I'd love to know.
You know, Twitter posts afterwards called for the protesters to be stoned or collectively raped.
Collectively raped. I don't even know how that happens. What do you pass them around like a plate?
Right.
How does this work?
Should we rape them? Well, collectively.
Yeah.
Wait, what? Wait, what?
Do you have to like all tape your dicks together and shove them in there at the same time?
How many of us have to do this? Like, ugh. Like the executioner. Like, what a fucking liar's punishment that is, too. Like, it's like, ugh, I got to rape somebody today.
Jeez.
Ugh. It's just like somebody is just a violent, power hungry shithead.
Yeah.
Right? That's the only reason something like that could possibly exist.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
So this story comes to the Raw story. Liberty U pastor tells Bernie Sandals. Sandals?
Sandals.
Bernie Sandals. Fucking hippie.
It totally fits him, though, doesn't
it? Right? Oh, my God. You know that's going to be a thing if he becomes – they're going to call him Bernie Sandals. You know, okay. So Liberty Hugh Pastor tells Bernie Sanders that cops shoot unarmed black people because of sin, not racism. I just got to start off like, is this man really that shade of orange? That's so orange.
No, I think that's bad lighting.
That's got to be.
That's got to be because he looks like a Cheeto.
He does look like a Cheeto. He looks like Chester Cheeto. I was moderating this thing.
Whenever Bernie says something, he's like, that was dangerously cheesy. This guy's impossible to look at.
Look at him.
I can't.
It's like
I can't. Like he looks like the fucking face on the moon. You remember like the old movie with that? He looks like that.
He does look like he's got like a rocket sticking out of his eye.
Oh, somebody, you guys have to go to see this at the Raw Story.
The best image.
And the thing is like your screen is not acting up. This is not unique to your screen because I'm looking at another screen and it looks ridiculous.
It's so funny. When you say the Cheetos, it's perfect because it looks like he just rubbed the dust.
He's got
Cheetos fingers, but he buried his whole head in the
face,
mat.
Yeah, he was bobbing for Cheetos.
Oh, good times. I remember those days.
So this is a very long piece, so we won't play it. Let's talk a little bit about what he says. Now, Bernie Sanders goes off on this big, long – I watched this thing earlier, and he goes off on a very well-prepared bit in front of Liberty University talking about, you know, the economic problems that black people face in this country, the discrimination that they face, the disproportionate number of them that are arrested, the disproportionate number of them that are charged, and the excessive charges that black people face in comparison to other races. And, you know, I mean, all the systemic racism that happens in our country. And he does a very good job of listing all this stuff. And to their credit, the audience follows him. And at the points where he's making these things to say that these sort of things need to change, the audience is giving applause throughout the whole piece. But they really do kind of flip out when the platitude comes out of Cheeto Man. He says, we would say, and I think I speak for many of our students, that it's not so much a skin issue as it is a sin issue.
What does that even mean?
What it means is the same thing that Mormons thought, that blacks is bad.
Right.
You know, that's what it seems like to me.
Yeah. But then he follows it up. He says that we can change the behavior of police. We could put cameras on them all day long, but behavior modification can only stop so short as identity change. I think we want what you want. I think he's saying that the police then have a sin issue. I'm not saying this as hyperbole at all. I read that paragraph because that's the key paragraph for this whole story, right, is what he says. That's the reason I picked it. And what bothers me about it is that I don't actually know what he's saying. Is that skin issue, sin issue thing, it sounds like something, but it's a deepity.
I think so, too. I think you're right. I think it's a deepity.
There's nothing there as a sin issue. Okay, well, fucking elaborate. Make a point. But instead of making a point, he goes on and says that, you know, that we can change the behavior of police. We can put cameras on them all day. But behavior modifications can only stop so short as identity change. And then again, no follow-up as to what that means. What is that?
He does another deepity later on when he says, I think you're going to find a commonality. You're going to find commonality is at Liberty University. We are not interested in making sure people are invited to sit in the bus or even sit at a restaurant table. We want to see them own the bus and own the restaurant.
Yeah.
What does that even mean? Not everybody can own a bus. That's just not a good idea for traffic. That's a terrible traffic
buses
idea.
For everybody.
And, you know,
everybody owns a restaurant. Like, there's no one to eat at our restaurant. And we also own a bus. It's a terribly – we own too much shit. I'm working.
Why is everyone in the service industry?
But I hate shit like this. Yeah. I hate this nonsense where it sounds like they're saying something.
Well, they want a hand up, not a hand out.
Right.
I mean, it's a real quick little turn of phrase that makes you say, oh, yeah. Wait, what?
Yeah. Right. Okay. Can we just if we can't get past the platitudinous nonsense, then we're not having a conversation. You know, I and he can't really do this, but I sort of think it would be amazing because Bernie Sanders is the kind of candidate who almost would. Is to get a response like that and be like, when you're prepared to have a real conversation, then re-engage me and leave.
He has done that to reporters. I've seen him do that to reporters.
He did that to that reporter that tried to hijack him, and he's like, yeah. I don't do ambush interviews. And the guy's like, well, I do ambush interviews. And he's just like, well, good luck with this one. He just bailed. He's like, I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
You know, have your people call my people. I don't do it that way.
You know, it's interesting, this political cycle, all these people going on all these different venues that I would not expect them to go to. Bernie Sanders speaking at Liberty University to me seems really weird.
Yeah, I thought it was actually pretty brave.
Jeb Bush on The Tonight Show.
Yeah, that's but candidates do things like The Tonight Show.
But that seems like
play the saxophone.
I know, but it seems like the realm. It seems like more the realm of Democrats than it does.
The joyless Republicans, especially
you know, Donald Trump hit a couple of them. A daytime show wound up getting Donald Trump. He went on The View as a caller.
Did he really?
Yeah, recently went on The View as a caller. And then Ellen had Hillary on. You know what I mean? Like, so like there's some they're really sort of getting a weird circuit now. There's a different trajectory, I think.
This election does feel weird.
Like, you know, it feels like Trump opened it up for something like this. Now, I'm not saying that this is a brand new experience, because you remember when maybe you're a little young for this, but Bill Clinton went on MTV and it was a big deal back in the day. He went on an MTV thing and people were like, whoa, what are you doing? Nobody goes on MTV. But in his first term before he was elected, he went on MTV, played the saxophone and did a, you know.
I remember the saxophone.
So, you know, you're talking about a guy, you know, what year was that? 1992?
Yeah.
So, you know, we're talking about, you know, it was the first election I could vote in. So it was years and years and years ago. And it was, you know, it was a totally rogue maneuver on his part to try to get some young people. But you know, now, and I don't know if they've always, I don't know if Reagan went on fucking Carson or something like that. Doesn't seem like something he would do, but maybe he did.
Maybe, yeah, I don't know.
But, you know, like it feels, this feels new though. And I think this feels more, especially this early in the race where they're still doing the nominee thing.
I agree with that for sure.
Because Trump is a star on television. And I think they're all trying to cash in on that if they can.
I think they're going to have to, right? Because he's going to be totally unafraid of the medium. He's going to be unafraid to be on any of the you know, television programming, whatever. He's going to be like, hey, this is my fucking ballywick. This is my home. You know, so to beat him on his home turf, you're going to have to do that kind of
thing. So we're back with Dan and Frank from Thank God I'm Atheist podcast. Guys, I said it right.
You did.
Yes,
you did. Thank God you nailed it that time.
I said it right, Tom. Yeah. You see, the difference is I said it right.
Yeah.
So, guys, if people never heard your show, could you describe your show for them?
Yeah, it's your show, only worse.
that's the worst thing anyone's ever said.
Oh my god! Oh my! That's like that's the worst thing anybody's ever said before lighting themselves on fire. Yes.
Yeah. That's like ISIS being like, "Hey, it's like being mean, but
we're like Al Qaeda, exactly. But worse."
Yeah, no, we do. We do current events. We talk about that, and we try and get in depth with some of the the issues that affect atheists and non-believers. We've had some cool interviews. We've had some cool people on, and I don't know. Had you describe your show first? It's not easy.
So why did you guys start it?
It was just so I had the blog. I had the URL. Thank God I'm Atheist, and I had been blogging and. I wanted, you know, Frank and I are both sort of media guys. Frank's a filmmaker, and I'm a
I don't know. I'm a dipshit.
Well, you're an actor.
I'm an actor.
You got that.
So we just, you know, we...
Yeah, you sounded real enthused. You're an actor. I just hear... Frank, like, he basically just said,
actor.
You're
he's
a waiter.
A good actor.
You know?
Yeah. He does a good job with that.
Yeah. Frank is always loath to pay me any kind of compliment, so...
It's part of our dynamic. It's why it works so well.
It's what's so charming is how much Frank hates me.
Well, Frank and Cecil would get along great.
You hate Dan too, Cecil?
Don't tell him I said that.
But it's a fun show. We have a good time. Some people seem to like it.
Your moms, you know?
Totally. Literally. Well, my mom listens. Frank has not even told
me. My mom doesn't even know I have a podcast.
And that's for the best.
Yeah.
So you guys are both ex-Mormon?
Mm-hmm.
We are. Yeah.
How long ago have you been Mormon? Mormoned. I don't know. I don't really know what's the verb for Mormoning.
I think you got it. I think you nailed
Mormon,
it. I haven't been Mormon for 20 years now.
Yeah. I was 22, probably about 17 or 18 years.
We both were raised in Mormonism. I was raised in Utah and Salt Lake City, and Frank was raised in buttfuck Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And We sort of what people don't understand is that Salt Lake City has this great counterculture, and we met
I think a lot of people assume it has no culture. The idea of a counterculture seems
frankly, I think Salt Lake's one of our country's best kept secrets. So let's just keep it that way. Let's just sure. It's the worst, you guys.
It's the worst
don't
thing ever.
Come
Both
here.
Of our listeners are gonna flood to Salt Lake City now. There's a second exodus to Salt Lake City.
Well, you'd be surprised. It is actually that's actually happening, but that's a story for another time.
So why'd you guys leave the Mormon Church? I mean, you just decided fuck it. This doesn't seem real, or what was that process like?
Well, Frank has a better story than I do.
Well, I mean,
I want to hear yours.
Yeah, I served an LDS mission. I went to Italy for two years.
Oh my!
And so I had a lot of different experiences, preaching the gospel. To the folks there. Didn't have a lot of success with that, as I'm sure you can imagine.
Strangely, people in Rome don't take to Mormonism. It's weird.
Yeah.
They've already made up their minds. We've got this base covered. Yeah, actually. Right. Yeah,
they have more religion than they know what to do with there.
They just tell you no very, 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 very vigorously with their hands. They're like, no, forget about it.
I had a number of little run-ins with people who really challenged my worldview kind of rocked me to the core a little bit. But then after my mission, I went to BYU, Brigham Young University, LDS church or university down in Provo. It didn't sit well with me at all.
I
was taking religion classes because you're required to do that, and it just wasn't working. I was seeing a new side of Mormonism that I hadn't really encountered before, and ultimately one night I just was laying in bed and I was like, well, I don't think I really believe this whole Book of Mormon thing, and I don't believe in Joseph Smith, and
I can't believe
in Mormonism, and do I still believe in God? Probably not. And that was it. Like, it was just this quick unraveling.
But it can't have helped that you were more interested in the other men at BYU than the co-eds.
Oh, those men down there. They're something else. They're all so sexually frustrated. They just run and run and go to the gym, and it's like the most amazing thing ever.
The Mormons have been, there's no secret that they backed some legislation and things.
Yeah.
They were pretty anti-gay for a long time.
Yeah.
And I know that they recently, at least on their face, changed their stance. I don't know how much of that is lip service or not lip service, I guess.
the only way that they changed their stance was that they're like, well, if you got, like, if the government, see, what you need to understand is that, like, especially here in Utah, Mormonism can, like, if the church tells the legislature to do something, they do.
Yeah.
So what the Mormon church said was, it's okay if you like allow for protections for gay people so that they can't get fired just for being gay.
Right.
Like or that was their being gay. That was their big like thing. But wow. It's not like they're not cool with gay people.
No.
Like you can't be.
So they didn't reverse their stance like the, you know, like the color of your skin is, you know, a marker right. of how no. sullied you are or how close to fucking ham time or whatever that fucking nonsense is, yeah. right?
No, yeah. it's that's still 10 to 15 years off. They will do it because as soon as they start to feel how unpopular they're getting, they'll definitely like suddenly there'll be a revelation from Jesus that just says, "Oh no, we're suddenly totally cool with the queers."
That's awesome.
What are you
that
talking
awesome.
About? We were never mad at you guys. Come on in.
I love that they could get messages from God. That is the best.
Oh yeah,
that's
one of the major innovations in Mormonism is that they can get direct messages from God that no one in the church is allowed to question. Yeah,
that is actually the smartest built-in feature. The this just in feature.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Extra, extra. Read all about it. Prophet says tithing is down, so here's our new decision.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Right? Like,
breaking
that
news.
That church seems to be all about the fucking money.
Yeah.
Well, that church seems to be a significantly. I mean, not that many of them are not. But
yeah.
Like, the Mormon church does money right. Like, it is aggressive, from what I'm to understand, about its tithing.
Oh yeah, you literally. They have so many systems in place to make sure that you pay a full 10% of your gross income. Like they are not fucking around. You have to sit down.
Yeah, pre-tax income.
You have to sit down in front of your bishop every year and look him in the eye, and he says, "Hey, did you pay a full tithe?" And if you say yes, like if you don't say yes, shit comes down on you.
Yeah.
I would just lie.
One of the best
though,
mechanisms that they have is actually the temple and the temple marriage, right? So you have like a set of parents, right? They want to be able to attend their child's wedding, right? And there's all this pressure. You get married in the temple. If you're not a full tithe payer, you can't go to the temple. So they keep families out from the marriage services.
But not only that. So, like, if you don't pay your full tithe, you can't go to the temple. Well, as soon as somebody gets married in your family, even if it's not your kid, if you say, "Oh, I can't go to the ceremony," everybody in your family knows you haven't been paying the full tithe.
Yeah,
it's this huge tattletale sort of thing, and they've got it all built in. They got it locked and loaded.
Well, there are other reasons why you might not. You might have, you know, slept around or something. I mean, there's all sorts of reasons why you could maybe aren't there.
But none of them are good. But,
right. Yeah,
it's not like I don't have the right shoes or something.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not like your pants are pleated. You can't play.
Exactly.
Like,
it's
terrible. Is there a carve out if you're a poor Mormon where you're just like, but I need that money for food?
No, they got that handled too because the Mormonism actually has a really aggressive welfare system. So if you're poor, you're expected to pay a full tithe, but then you can go to the bishop and just say, "I can't afford X, Y, and Z." And like they'll pay for first, they'll give you food. But if things go really pear-shaped for, you know, a couple months, I used to work in the cell phone industry and people would come in and pay their cell phone bill with a church check. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. So, like, they got you covered to some extent on that. On
as
that
long
point.
As you're paying that 10%. So, you're making next to nothing. You're living under the poverty, or you're making under the poverty line.
Right.
Yeah. Now you pay your 10%. The church.
But then they just shower you with, you know,
so they're cool
groceries
that way.
And whatnot.
They're,
and money.
They're very pragmatic. At least it's not that awful, like, you know, like the televangelists with their prosperity gospel and, you know, if you pay me, you'll get rich sort of thing. They're not like that at all.
Yeah, they're just like, if you pay me, we'll get rich.
Right, that's basically it.
Yeah.
And if you don't pay me, I'm making sure everybody in the ward knows that you're awful.
It's still, though, like, I understand what you're getting at, though, and the social pressures there. That's a real devious way to get people to you know, under your control.
To do a voluntary thing?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, exactly. It's supposed to be voluntary. Yeah.
Right.
And then the idea that, you know, while you're poor, you still have to tithe 10%, but we'll be able to, like, pay your cell phone bill if you fall behind on it. You know, that almost feels like, it feels like the nicest mob in the world.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
It's totally the mob. Like, you have no idea. Like, we are talking about a mafia here. If you go, you know, if you need a plumber, they got a guy. You know, if you need, it doesn't matter. Like anything you need. Well, no, you come to me. Don't go outside the church. You can come to me. I'll find you somebody.
So you guys mentioned earlier that you've had some interesting guests on. For people that are going to come over to your show, tell me a couple of episodes where you've had some guests on that you thought were particularly interesting.
You know, when we had Pete Boghossian on, that was actually a really interesting chat. His book, A Manual for Creating Atheists, we had gotten in trouble because a couple weeks before that we had sort of... Because we're our reputation is that we tend to be nice guys. Like we don't scathe the way certain other podcasters do, and so, which is totally cool. Like we're down with Noah and everything, but that's just not our gig, right?
Any names.
So
yeah.
So we kind of went after the book based on an article that we read about Peter Boghossian's book. So then a bunch of people came down on us and we were like, well, okay, let's have him on the show. And it turned out to be a really cool conversation.
Yeah.
So that was a good one.
That was a good one. I always liked your Bishop of London.
That was an interesting one. I actually interviewed the guy who's the third in succession from the top of the Anglican Church, of the Church of England. So when I was in London, I actually got to interview the Bishop of London. So that was a really interesting interview.
The church nobody in England really belongs to. I mean, they belong by default.
Right, yeah. Oh, they all belong to it. They just don't. They just don't care about it.
Yeah. So, guys, if people were going to find your show, where would they look?
Oh, you know, so you could go to thankgodimatheist.com. And it's there, but you know, on your iTuneses and your Stitcherses and your wherever you go to find your content.
Wherever fine podcasts are sold.
Right, exactly. Check your local listings.
Guys, thanks for joining us. It was awesome.
Hey, yeah, thanks so much, guys. We really appreciate it.
Well, that's going to wrap it up for a short show this week. We'll be back on Monday with a full show. We want to thank Dan and Frank from Thank God I'm Atheist.
I believe it's Thank God I Am an Atheist.
For stopping by. We appreciate them coming by. If you want to check out their podcast, you can go to thankgodimatheist.com. That's Thank God I'm Atheist. I will post that on this week's show notes if you want to check out their show. They were a blast to have on. They were a lot
great
of fun.
Guys.
We should be appearing on their 200th episode. They interviewed us very quickly, and we had a lot of fun on their show. So if you want to check out that, we'll have a link when it posts. It may post by the time this show comes out, so it may be on these show notes. If not, it will be on episode 250 of our show. We will list our appearance on theirs. But I think that's going to wrap it up for this time. We'll catch you on Monday, and we're going to leave you, like we always do, with the Skeptic's Creed.
Credulity is not a virtue. It's fortune cookie cutter, mommy issue, hypno Babylon bullshit. Couched in scientician, double bubble, toil and trouble, pseudo-quasi-alternative, acupunctuating, pressurized, stereogram, pyramidal, free energy, healing, water, downward spiral, brain dead pan, sales pitch, late night info docutainment. Leo, Pisces, cancer cures, detox, reflex, foot massage, death and towers, tarot cards, psychic healing, crystal balls, Bigfoot, Yeti, aliens, churches, mosques, and synagogues, temples, dragons, giant worms, Atlantis, dolphins, truthers, birthers, witches, wizards, vaccine nuts, shaman healers, evangelists, conspiracy, doublespeak, stigmata, nonsense. Expose your sides. Thrust your hands, bloody, evidential, conclusive. Doubt even this.
The opinions and views expressed in this show are that of the hosts only. Our poorly formed and expressed notions do not represent those of our wives, employers, friends, families, or of the local dairy council.
So, you know, mom passes away, and I get back to work, and there's tons of cards in my mailbox.
That's nice.
So people at work, I work at a big place where people send, you know, there's, I know dozens of people, you know what I mean? Like maybe
sure.
even,
yeah.
I might even know hundreds of people where I work. And so I, you know, I got maybe 24 cards.
That's,
you know,
that's actually quite nice.
And people sending me messages.
Yeah.
And I got a handwritten note from a priest that I had as a teacher in my undergrad.
Really?
So he sent me a handwritten note that said, just so you know, I know when a man loses his mother, it's a very big deal. It's a very difficult time. And, you know, my thoughts are with you.
That's kind.
And it was a really kind, really great message.
Yeah.
But I got a lot of messages both on Facebook and off and in these cards.
Sure.
It was like, I'll pray for you. You're in my prayers. You're in my thoughts and prayers.
Yeah.
And I've always seen people get really bent out of shape by that. That they've sort of, they look at that and they say, you know what? You know, I've seen people, I've seen comments and, you know,
right.
like that sort of, it's that sort of like pushback against that, like, don't pray for me kind of thing.
Sure.
And I didn't feel anything but thankful that they said that. I never felt like it was an imposition or that I needed to care how they spent their time. You know what I mean? I never felt like I was being insulted when they said they would keep me in their prayers, that they were doing nothing. Because the people who said that they would keep me in their thoughts are doing the exact same thing that the people who are doing their prayers.
Right.
They're doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Both of them are effectively nothing, but at least they're doing, they're still thinking that what they're saying is that your distress will be on my mind.
Yeah, right.
Your hurt will be on my mind. And I got another message from someone that said, at this particular mass coming up, and it didn't give a date, which was weird, we'll be praying for your mother's soul. And they listed my mother's name. We'll be praying for her soul. And my first reaction was, well, don't expect me to come. like I'm not going to go.
Super busy not going to that.
Totally
that
not going to go.
Yeah.
But again, I don't care that they do it. And then part of me said, well, what happened if I were to die? Like, let's say I was going down the road and I fucking hit a car and fucking died. There's part of me that would say, don't do that for me. You know, respect my beliefs enough now so that when I'm dead, you shouldn't do that to me. And then I thought about it for 20 more seconds and thought, I won't care.
Yeah, right.
Because I'll be really dead at that time.
Yep.
So I won't care.
Yeah.
So who cares whether or not someone prays for my soul after I die? Who gives a shit?
Yeah. You know, I mean, I've always felt, I mean, it's not an original thought or saying, like, you know, a funeral or whatever, it's for the living. It's not for the dead.
Sure.
Right. So it almost is tangential to the deceased. And in fact, it is tangential because
absolutely
the tangent are the folks that are living. Like,
sure,
we're holding a funeral so we can do a thing that gives us closure. And if the thing that gives us closure involves, you know, some rite or ritual of religious significance for the living, then I mean, I'm kind of right there with you.
Yeah.
Now I say that, were I the kind of person who would plan their own funeral, which feels weird and kind of like narcissistic to me to think about, so I wouldn't do it. But if I were going to plan my own funeral, would I plan a – of course I would not plan a religious ceremony. But, you know, thinking about that, maybe that would be a little mean to not plan a religious ceremony if my family were religious.
Sure.
Now, they don't happen to be religious, but you know, I like the I'll pray for you thing, that always struck me like someone's spending time on me.
Yeah.
Like they're spending their time.
Sure.
That they don't have to spend thinking about me.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just nice.
Yeah.
And I
feel like I've read the pushback. You know, there's a ton of, you know, whether they're memes or they're, you know, screenshots of Facebook conversations or whatever it is. And, you know, what I noticed when I because I posted a very short eulogy after my mom died on Facebook. I posted a very short eulogy, something very quick, and just said, you know, and I think I posted a song for her. I posted a very short message and then a song and said, you know, like, goodbye, mom, or something. And I noticed all these people were saying, I'm really sorry, I'm really sorry. And there's a bunch of people. The people who don't know me said, I'll pray for you.
Sure.
The people who I don't know and haven't known for years or fucking sure. went to high school with or whatever, those are the I'll pray for you people.
Right.
The people close to me, the people who know me, none of them said that.
Sure.
Not a single one. Even if they were religious, they didn't say that.
Yeah.
Because they knew that that wasn't a thing to me. So all it does is show me, you know, while some people, you know, may be just writing this just to sort of, you know, as a cathartic thing on their own, you know, getting through their own grief, right?
Sure.
You write a little card out because you still are dwelling on your own passings
yeah,
and
sometimes,
things.
Sometimes, for sure, yeah.
Other people, you know, because I got some cards from people that clearly are religious and they didn't say anything about prayers.
Yeah. They're just telling you what, a lot of times just telling you, they're writing down the thing they think you want to
hear. Hear.
To make you feel better.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I do think sometimes some families are like crazy religious families and they'll use funerals as an excuse to proselytize.
Sure, sure.
I think that's an atypical experience. But when that happens, I think that's ugly as fuck.
I do too, absolutely.
You know,
and I would have pushback if somebody were to go farther than I'll pray for you and instead post something about, oh, well, don't worry, your mom's with God, sitting hand in hand with God in some place. I may react to that.
Yeah.
I may react to something like that and say, well, look, that's not my belief. I think my mom's gone forever. I don't think my mom's coming back.
Sure.
And for you to, you know, animate my mom in your little fucking fantasy
right.
is kind of offensive.
Sure.
I might go there. You know what I mean? But the innocuous, I'm not going to touch that. I'm just going to say you're in my prayers.
Right.
That doesn't bother me.
Yeah. I think that's like, that's like if someone says Merry Christmas. You know what
right.
I mean?
You
like,
just got to smile.
They're expressing, at this point, it's honestly become kind of a culturally generic well-wishing.
Yeah.
Right? It's like you sneeze, someone says bless
exactly.
you.
Exactly.
It doesn't mean anything to me. It doesn't, I am never going to be offended when somebody's like, I wish you well. I'll be like, fuck you. I hate you. I'll fucking stab
you. Don't
your children.
You bless me, motherfucker.
Right. Like,
shirts off now.
Right. Suns out, guns out, motherfucker. Like, what is happening?
If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.